In unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas, having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to face the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Morning.
Good morning.
Worth it preparing a lecture, just yeah, I don't mind. I like preparing for lecture. I mean, just because I like it. Especially when I have something to say, which I do. This feels so far away, I'm not sure why. We've been studying Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, Suzuki Roshi's, I'd say that's seminal. It sounds so pretentious, seminal work. During this practice period and concentrating on this section about practice, and we've already talked about breathing, which is one of the sections, fascicles. Excuse me, if I say welcome, and if I say anything that's too jargony or whatever, just please guess what I'm talking about. So, Steve already lectured about breathing, but he said that he felt like he didn't finish it. There's a lot to say in this. It's called a fascicle. But anyway, this section. And one of the things I noticed looking at it, I figured I might as well finish up to the extent that one could ever finish up breathing. You don't really want to finish up breathing. At any rate, I thought I would continue. And one thing that struck me right away was it's called breathing. It's not called breath. It's called breathing. Because, I don't know why he did that, or why actually the editors did that. He didn't title his talk that, I don't imagine. But what it means to me is that it's a continuous process. He talks about it as a swinging door, but it isn't. It doesn't go just one way. It swings this way, and then it swings this way. And it is a process. We often say that you use your breath to relax. You breathe out a long breath and your body just relaxes. And notice that you breathe in. And usually when you're going to do that as a way to relax, first you breathe in a good big breath, and then you let it out. And that in-breath is also part of it. And I think we often forget that. The in-breath is a gathering. In some sense, it's taking the outside, to the extent there is such a thing, taking the outside in, and then letting the inside out. And it's a continuous process. Sometimes we say, just think. You could be breathing in and out the Buddha's breath, or Ananda's breath, or Mother Teresa's breath, or whoever does it for you. Because we're all breathing all the time, and the air goes where it goes. The winds take it. New York got our wildfire smoke. So it's breathing, it's a process. Suzuki Roshi said in this essay, it's not, in fact, to say it's not an essay, it's an edited talk. So a fascicle means a part of a larger whole, like an essay in an anthology or a short story or whatever. But so these are edited lectures. But anyway, he said, when your mind is pure and calm enough to follow this movement of the breath, he's just been describing it as a without self. It's not an I breathe. It's not mine. It's just breathing. Simply breathing. Breathing is breathing. When your mind is pure and calm enough to follow this movement of the breath without self, there is nothing. Or as I like to say, no thing, no object, no subject. At any rate, there is nothing, no I, no world, no mind, no body, just a swinging door. Great images. And of course, I always think, and for me, it's useful to have an image. And at San Francisco Zen Center, as I've said many times, between it was built as a residence for young Jewish women many years before San Francisco Zen Center had it. So it is set up as kind of like an institution or hotel or something like that. So there's a huge kitchen and a huge dining room. And between them, there are two swinging doors. You go in the right one and out the, well, from the perspective of the dining room, you go in the right one and out the left one. And actually, that's what you do the same with the kitchen, because you turn around the other way. But at any rate, and they have each of those doors has a stained glass window in it, and on one side there are two hands of the perfect gusho, and on the other side it's sort of like this. And this one is Suzuki Roshi's hands, and this one is Katagiri's hands. So that's what I think of, a swinging door. And we have that experience after you've been meditating for a while. It's not that your mind becomes blank, but that you are not engaged in the thoughts. They're just thoughts. They're not hardly, they might maybe sort of not yours. For me, sometimes when I'm settled, a thought would arise and it wouldn't even complete itself. It's just sort of like a bubble pops. And I don't care. In my normal daily life, if I had a half a thought, I'd be grabbing what? But there's just breathing. And the thoughts don't bother you. Zach once said about Zazen that he hears the birds, but he doesn't listen to them. So he doesn't make them other, which is what we do a lot of times when we hear something. We say, "Oh, that's and it's always that over there's a dog." Well, don't talk to her. On your lap. You get back. Go on, get back. All right, I'll stop. She's just on the edge of, I guess if somebody's listening to this instead of seeing it, they can tell on the screen, but this will be posted online. Anyway, she's sitting on her bed in the community room, but her feet are on the first line of the dark lines around the hardwood floor in the zendo. And she's looking innocent and pleading. So So I don't listen to them. I don't make them a thing. So your mind is pure and calm enough. We've talked about pure because it's a word he uses a lot, and it's kind of a triggering word. We think pure is chaste, maidenly, perfect, never swears, whatever, those kinds of things. And that's not what he means by pure. He means not tainted by self-clinging, which, of course, we're tainted by all the time. It's our basic ignorance that we have this separate self that does the breathing. Sometimes in zazen, we let go of that. And what a joy. And then you notice the joy and then you already forgot. But there can be times of simply calm. Just breathing. There's a wonderful poem that we usually call The Wind Bell. It was by Dogen. Dogen is our founder in Japan, that guy. He was born in 1200, so it was a while ago. He went and studied in China for some time, and his teacher was named Ru Jing. And Ru Jing wrote a poem about the wind bell. And a wind bell is sometimes... They hang from the eaves outside of a temple. They might hang from the eaves. One might hang from the eaves. And it's kind of, the ones that I've seen are kind of round and then they're hollow. And then they have a strip of metal. So it's sort of like a wind chime. And so when the wind blows it, it moves that strip of metal and it rings. But of course the wind bell doesn't care which way the wind blows. It just swings. So the poem is, the whole body of the windmill, the whole body is like a mouth hanging in empty space. There's another translation from Shasta Abbey. My whole being is like the mouth of a bell suspended in empty space. Without distinguishing the winds from east, west, south, and north, together expressing prajna equally to all beings. Da-ding dong, meow, da-ding dong. The whole body is like a mouth hanging in empty space. Without distinguishing the winds from east, west, south, or north, together expressing prajna equally to all beings. Da-ding-dong, liao, da-ding-dong. So together expressing prajna, expressing, oh, Rosie, get back. Get back. Okay, now I'll close the door. Goodbye. I'm afraid she might decide to take that opportunity to come inside. Thank you. Prajna, expressing prajna equally. I might quibble with the expressing part because it's not doing, it's just being a wind bell. You know, it's not even saying, I'm going to sound when the wind comes, or, well, that was a good one, you know, like if the wind hits it just right. It's just doing wind bell. And it's just hanging there. Like, so there's a name for that kind of, like the metal that's hanging down, whatever that is. It just moves with the Dharma. It just moves with the winds. And prajna is the kind of wisdom that sees that nothing at all has permanent self, that does not get attached to things. It just sees clearly. We talk about the prajnaparamita, the perfection of wisdom. And she is an organ of vision. She just sees things as it is, sees clearly. So, I like that. My whole being is like the mouth of a bell, suspended in empty space. And it's really helpful, I think, to have an image. And I have those swinging doors at City Center, but Windmill will do. And it is, I think it's a better, this is probably equivalent, but it's a better image than wind chimes, because wind chimes are kind of complicated. And I could imagine this at a temple, a kind of big one. Can't be too big because it has to be responding to the breezes. And at the same time that there's just breath breathing, it's also true that I breathe. My problem is that I'm too attached to this I who's breathing. And I give it too much credence. And at the same time, I do exist in this world. I mean, I have to not walk into tables and relate to other people and walk my dog. Suzuki Roshi talks about a poem by a man named Dokshan, whom he calls Tozan, which is what the Japanese call him, right? And he was Chinese. And you could say he was the Chinese founder of our school. And my teacher, Mel Weitzman, this fellow, he loved his poem. He often talked about it. Not necessarily the whole thing, because he talked about it so much that he didn't need to. So Dokshan wrote, "The blue mountain is the father of the white cloud. The white cloud is the son of the blue mountain. All day long they depend on each other without being dependent on each other. The white cloud is always the white cloud. The blue mountain is always the blue mountain. The blue mountain is the mother of the white cloud. The white cloud is the daughter of the blue mountain. All day long they depend on each other without being dependent on each other. We're dependent on each other. The white cloud is always the white cloud. The blue mountain is always the blue mountain." So we have to exist in our world as Asha or Mary or Zach. And we are really the whole universe, each of us. We're not a separate being. And these things are both true. The trouble is that we're attached to one side or the other, usually attached to the I am, me, mine side. Some people are attached to the no difference side. But that's not as common. Those are the people whose mother dies and they say, oh, that's all right. Oh, you say, you express your condolences. They say, it's all right. You know, there's really no death and we're all one. Your mother died. So all day long they depend on each other because we define each other. We need to have that separation. We need to have a sense of self. But we don't need it the way we think we need it. And what we need to do, I was trying to think of a different way to express this, but it'll do. What we need to do is each of us to be completely ourselves. Minus the grasping part, which is pretty much impossible. But the more we're aware of it, and the more we sit zazen and experience, physically and mentally, experience letting go of that grasping attachment, letting go of that longing for permanence, at least really loosening our grip, the better able we are to be each of us ourselves. So they depend on each other without being dependent on each other. The white cloud is always the white cloud. The blue mountain is always the blue mountain. There's a wonderful short poem. I don't know that it's a haiku, but a short poem by Dogen. He says that, let's see, I'll get close enough. One day I suddenly saw that the snow makes the mountain. The snow makes the mountain. So Suzuki Roshi goes on after quoting Dongshan. When we become truly ourselves, we just become a swinging door, and we are purely independent, and at the same time dependent upon everything. Without air, we cannot breathe. Each one of us is in the midst of myriads of worlds. We are in the center of the world always, moment after moment. So we are completely dependent and independent. If you have this kind of experience, you have absolute independence. You will not be bothered by anything. So when you practice zazen, your mind should be concentrated on your breathing. This kind of activity is the fundamental activity of universal being. Without this experience, this practice, it is impossible to attain absolute freedom. And as we've been talking about often for the last few weeks, he expresses himself with sort of absolute terms. And I imagine one of his purposes, to extend it wasn't simply how he expressed himself in English, I don't know, was to really emphasize something. He could be impatient. His son, Poitsu, will tell you stories about his impatience. And I don't know about absolute freedom, because you may have enlightenment experiences or an enlightenment experience, but you still have to live in the world. And you still have to deal with other people and probably work and groceries and whatever else, paying the bills. But That notion is so useful, I think. When we truly become ourselves, we just become a swinging door. And that is true. When I am not attached to myself, when I am not protecting myself, when I am not evaluating myself, when I'm not all that stuff, there is an ease. Like just a swinging door. And it is a fruit of practice. It's not that it becomes easy and perfect and I don't know any. I said this before. I know a number of people that I would think of as Zen masters, and not one of them is perfect. I said that once, not that long ago. Mel died in January of this year, so it's relatively recent. And so I was lecturing at Berkeley last year at some point, and I said that, and he was there. And at Berkeley, you're sitting on that side of the altar, and he's sitting over here. When you're lecturing, you sit there. And I said that not one of them was perfect. And he leans forward with this big grin on his face. He says, "Except me." So then that became a running joke for the rest of that lecture. But you can't practice in order to get that. Just stop listening to the birds. You still hear them. So Zazen, you just breathe in, pause, breathe out, pause. Breathe in, pause, breathe out, pause. Don't pull the next breath in, just don't even wait for it, just do this thing. Let it do you. In some sense, the breath does you. If you relax, the next breath will come in. You'd have to hold it out or hold your breath. Otherwise, it will come in. And the out breath will follow. And unless you just died, the breath will follow that. Do you have any questions or comments? Or Asha?
Is the name of the fascicle breathing?
Yes.
Is it the fourth fascicle?
Maybe the second.
It is. It's the second.
Okay. Can you remind me of the first one?
Posture.
Okay.
We've done posture, and in class we've done posture, mind, weeds, and waves, the marrow of Zen, and bowing. And we lectured on breathing twice. And I think we lectured on marrow again.
In today's talk, you mentioned, I think, what sounded like a good definition of prajnaparamita, and I wondered if you could expand on that a little bit. I want to make sure I get it.
Okay, I don't remember what I said. Okay,
so. Said something about the wisdom of energy or the energy.
We chant something called the homage to the prajnaparamita. A prajnaparamita is called the mother of the Buddhas, and it's the perfection of wisdom, meaning not perfect exactly, but though in that sense perhaps it is, but it's if you perfect your ability to play the piano by practicing. But prajna is wisdom, but not head wisdom, not book learning. It's intuitive wisdom. It's the wisdom It's the kind of thing that you know in your bones because you've actually experienced it. You really know it. And it is about knowing the reality. Prajnaparamita knows the reality of things as it is because she sees the interconnectedness and the emptiness of own being of all things. And she knows the individuality of all things. One of the lines in the poem that we recite for her is, she has a clear knowledge of the own being of all dharmas, which is good. They don't have own being, right? But we think they do. So she has a clear knowledge of the own being of all dharmas, for she does not stray away from it. So she's right here with the mind. It's an idea, and it's personified. It's the very voluptuous figure in this niche right here, just inside the door of the hallway. That's Prajnaparamita. And I think that's enough for now, but it's the practice of a lifetime. Anybody else? I don't know what to make of the face. I don't know if that's all. This is your festival.
I know. I don't know what my face looked like, but I was just thinking, boy, I should say something because it was, there was so much more I didn't want to say. And, you know, there's never a way to finish off talking about breath, as you said. And there's certainly, we don't want to stop breathing. But I really loved that it's the second fascicle in the compilation, that first is posture, then is breath. When he talks about posture, he says, this is all you should be thinking about or concentrating on in Zazen is posture. And then the next fascicle, he says, breathing is all you should be concentrating on in Zazen, just breathing. And actually, I think he's right. But, you know, there's a way in which I don't feel that posture and breathing are two things. Can you possibly breathe if you don't have, you're always breathing, but you breathe better if you're sitting up straight. You breathe better if you are open inside. And to the extent you can, you just let that breath in and let it out. So it's not different. I think you could say, you could just substitute either one or the other or have a slash. Posture / breathing is the most important thing in Zazen. So
yeah, your breath and your body.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you. We can go move on talking about it forever. Yes.
When you were talking about the wind bell, reminded me of the Bob Dylan line. You don't have to be a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. Of course, in our case, we don't want it. We don't care which way it's blowing. But I like the imagery of what you read about the bell.
Yeah, well,
I don't want to get one.
Me, I want.
Well, you could donate it to the temple. You could hang it right. For a long time, the San Francisco Zen Center had a journal, and it was called the Wind Bell. And we have a book that has a lot of old ones in it, and I think they were going to restart it up again. I'm not sure if they did, but anyway, okay, you people online, is there anything?
Beings are numberless,
I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them.